Begin.
Please note that the following program includes adult themes and language. You're listening to the weekly show on Discourse.
Oh yeah, I'm back.
Oh yeah, we're all back. I'm Morgan Nickel, big mouth dickhead from the internet.
And I'm Dylan Reeve, sane, well-reasoned, small mouth dickhead from the internet.
I was wondering where you were going with that. I'm quite pleased I did such an insane self-intro for myself then, given that you are now claiming to be the sane one. I don't say that I'm insane in my thing.
Well-reasoned, too.
You might be well-reasoned, but you don't express your reasoning generally lately. It's just been, I'm right, you're wrong.
That's not right.
Isn't it?
No.
Ipso facto QED, you are incorrect. Mister. So what's been going on this week? I'll tell you what's been going on. I'm having the exact same drink I've had the last couple of weeks. It's ice in a 1 litre stein with Spates Old Dark and sugar-free Olympi. And it's so delicious. I mean, it's just, you know, a very slightly modified shandy. It's so delicious. It's perfect for this weather. Mm-hmm. What have you been up to? What have you been drinking?
Water.
Yeah.
Coke Zero.
Yeah.
Juice.
Yeah.
That's the bulk of it.
Yeah. Apparently all of these artificial sweeteners that we all drink, you know, many of us drink, not very good for us. Well, kind of the opposite of they're awesome. Yeah, they're not really good for us. All that trickery, all those chemicals, they don't do very good. They're not helpful. Mm. Something about caffeine also is not particularly good for us in terms of, you know, the way we chop fat on and digest. Mm.
I've seen some interesting studies about artificial. I haven't seen ones that say, well, there are some that say artificial sweeteners inherently are bad. But they're also backed up by ones that say, no, not really. But what I have seen that's interesting and kind of makes sense is that artificial sweeteners can actually still make you, or can have the opposite to intended effect.
Yeah.
In that you have all this sweetness that doesn't actually deliver any calories and it freaks your body out into actually then making you crave sweetness that does deliver calories.
Yeah. There are amazing processes at work in your body. We're not actually talking about particular stories, so we don't have citations in front of us. Well, I haven't. I'm not sure if you have. I read about one study where people would exercise on those treadmill things with the big ventilator thing. So that I'm not sure what they measure, like carbon dioxide output, and from that they can measure like efficiency of how you're working, or I don't know, something like that.
Yeah, something like that. It's measuring efficiency.
And what they did was they got people just to swill particular different kinds of like recovery drinks in their mouths and then spit them out. And the people that swilled, I can't remember which specific one it was, but it's like people who swilled the Powerade actually performed better even though they didn't consume any. Absolutely insane. That's weird. Our bodies are weird things, strange machines.
I love Powerade.
Yeah, it's good. So there's a lot of sugar and salt though, isn't there, in Powerade?
It's not like table salt, but yeah.
But aren't electrolytes basically, they're just saying salt, aren't they, when they say electrolytes?
In the broader sense, yes.
Yeah, not good for growing crops. I've learned from that documentary called Idiocracy. It's a warning come from the future.
It is a documentary, isn't it?
Yeah. Beaten. Fuck off! I can't remember the line. Beaten. What is he like eating butter out of a giant tub? I'm pretty sure that's what he's doing. Anyway,
I'm pleased to say I haven't actually seen it in a very long time, and not a lot of it stuck with me.
It's a bad movie.
Well, it sort of is, and it sort of isn't. It's not that bad.
I'll tell you what's bad about it. That actor, IMDb.
Dax Shepard.
Idiocracy. Is that his name? Dax Shepard?
Yeah, if it's the one I think of. He's married to, what's her name? Kristen Bell. Kristen Bell, who used to be Veronica Mars. And is now in a show called House of Lies, which is very good.
I'm very impressed that you identified Dax Shepard. You were correct. He's terrible.
Yeah, I'm not sure why. Oh, he also used to be one of the main players on, what was that show where Ashton Kutcher used to, Punk'd.
Right.
He was one of the main.
One of his buddies.
Yeah, he was, I guess, one of his buddies and would, he actually, Dax Shepard is a director. He directs quite a lot of TV.
Right.
And arguably some good TV. So right. I guess maybe his directing is better than his acting.
Mm.
I think it's just he's kind of quirky and thus Yeah,
my directing's better than my acting, but it's not saying much.
Moving on.
So my food bag. My feed bag. It's a sack full of oats, apparently, and you strap it to the back of your head.
I understand where you're coming from. As I understand it, that's a common mistake that people are making. That's my feed bag.
Oh yeah.
Versus my food bag.
So what is my food bag?
Well, I don't know. I hadn't heard of it until some people started twittering.
Some people
about it.
Every celebrity in New Zealand. Every fucking A, B, and C. Actually, we kind of don't really start at A list.
Really, I don't think it.
Every B and C list celebrity in New Zealand started tweeting about it all within the space of about 25 minutes.
I didn't see many. I saw Damien and Christie, who I'm not sure.
He was being ironic about it, I think.
Well, he had one, though. I mean, you know. Yeah. Vaughan Davis had one, I think.
Yeah.
So neither of those. Well, Damien and Christie maybe.
I said B and C list. I did say B and C list.
I know Kerry Woodham had one, and JJ Feeney, who's from
Hawksby. Hawksby?
Kate Hawksby had one. I didn't see most of those tweets, to be honest. You know, they're not people I'm following.
No, neither. I don't follow any. I follow Damien, but that's because he's an old mate from school. None of the other people.
Damien through work and things as well. Yeah. And actually through the internet long before TV.
Yeah.
So they all tweeted about their dinners, which all happened to be prepared from the same service, this My Food Bag thing.
Yeah.
And some people were a bit funny about it. And I think I've blogged about this twice now. In the second blog, I came up with this concept that blog. That sounds like a stupid word when you say it out loud. I've written two posts on my website about this. And in the second post, that's better.
Right. Our story from My Food Bag CoNZ. My Food Bag was born out of the idea. I'm just going to tell people what it is before you can tell people what happened and what you think about it. My Food Bag was born out of the idea that healthy and delicious food can also be convenient and exciting. Our goal is to bring inspiring, nutritionally balanced, tasty recipes and the best of New Zealand seasonal produce together and deliver it. So they send you a bag which has ingredients and recipes.
Yeah.
And you pay them.
There are already a number of services where they send you a box with food in them.
Yeah.
There is one called Food Box.
Yeah, I've done Food Box.
Delivered. So if I were doing Food Box at the moment, it's actually working out quite well.
Yeah. Lately I've been doing naturally organic.
Right.
Which is pretty good.
Yeah. I think my food bag is actually a really good idea for some people, and I would have probably been into it either when before kids, certainly. Less practical now. And cooking.
We're replacing that sense of dread as to what you're going to cook with eager anticipation of what might be in your weekly food bag. This is designed for people with mental illness.
No, it's not. Think about it.
It's very easy to decide what you're going to cook.
It is and it isn't. Because, you know, when you get right down to it, you usually end up going to the same. Well, I don't know about other people, but, you know, I like.
You have a selection of favorite recipes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you want to try new things, but then you're like, if you're in our house, you're overwhelmed by the 100+ cookbooks and you don't even know where to begin. And then you do look at one and you're like, oh, God, I have to go and find all these ingredients.
Cookbooks aren't for cooking from.
I think it's quite cool because it's like, you get a bag sort of blind and you get each one comes with a recipe and it's like a new challenge to yourself and it comes with all the parts. It's kind of like those magazines where you get a bit of the model each time, which are an insane ripoff.
They're a scam, those things.
Oh yes, they are. Mm-hmm. But it's a bit like that, and it's kind of scratching the niche for like having a hobby, I guess. And it kind of all comes ready to go. I think it would totally have been up my alley when I was living alone, or when it was.
It's $175 though.
Before kids,
it's $175, Dylan. I don't think you would have done.
No, it's it's $140 for the basic one, isn't it?
There's one that's $140. That's the My Gourmet Food Bag. It's
That's for two people for 5 nights.
Yeah.
So that's, I mean, it's.
And there's the My Classic Food Bag, which is $179.
Which is for four or five
people. It's for a family your size.
Yeah, for a family my size. Which is actually, it's still not that bad. It's like $7.50 a serve. And if you went out and bought a cooking magazine, for example, you know, Healthy Food or Taste or one of those cooking magazines, and they have their little budget, you know, or meal plans or little budget cooking things, $7.50 a serve. I mean, it's in the upper end of budget, but it's not that pricey.
Yeah.
Like, it's not, you know, there's absolutely no question you can spend less money and cook either the same or better things, or, you know, I don't know, maybe not better. Who knows? They're designed chefily. But I think it's quite cool when you look at it as the whole. You get all the bits you need. You get the instructions, essentially, and it's like a little cooking challenge.
Yeah.
And I think people who... I think that'll meet the desires of a lot of people.
Yeah. I like the surprise.
She says it's practical for the average family. She. I don't think that's quite true.
She
being Nadia Lim.
Yeah.
Who was a winner of MasterChef.
Oh, really?
I believe so.
MasterChef is?
A television show where people cook food.
What?
I said this.
I don't watch those shows. Oh, so that's who this girl is in the photos, Nadia Lim.
Yeah.
She's famous.
Kind of. I think the step they're missing, and I think what would be an awesome thing would be for like an extra $10, an optional extra $10, you also get like a video cooking lesson for each one.
No.
No, absolutely. People would do
$10?
That. Sure, why not?
Why?
On top of your existing...
Why? Just put them on YouTube.
Yeah, but you know, you get a little app and all that shit. Who knows? I don't know. I think that's the next
Do you know
step.
How much it costs to make an app?
Nothing. Nothing these days. You can get an Indian guy to do it for $20, and I'm not actually kidding. No, seriously.
And it will be really high quality.
Freelancer.com. I'm not kidding. Really high quality. An Indian guy will make an app for you.
So probably. I like the element of surprise. I quite like that in the boxes that I get. You don't know everything that's going to be in there. I mean, you can be pretty sure, depending on which one you get, that there's going to be, you know, various kinds of fruit and some sorts of vegetables, but you don't really know exactly what you're going to get. But the thing is, it doesn't really matter what you get. And then, you know, you throw in some, you know, some specific things that you want into the box as well, you know, in the order form. You say, I want some of these amazing purple something, purple pride or something, potatoes.
Which I want some persimmons.
Incredible.
I don't even know what to do with those.
You leave them a very long time and then you eat them. I think persimmon, that's the one that has to be, or am I thinking of pomegranate? Persimmon, no, it has to be really very overripe, and then you'll eat it.
Yeah, pomegranate, you just squeeze the thing and eat only the teeny little bits of seed.
Yeah.
Seems like a ridiculous fruit.
I'm not a fruit, I'm completely straight, it's just my voice.
I understand.
And that's not my fault. I like that there are, you know, there's an element of surprise and sort of a degree of restriction, and I like that with the boxes that I get, but on the other hand, I actually don't need to be told what to make. You know, tonight we had a rack of lamb, and last night I can't even remember. We had steaks, and that's pretty easy to come up with. You know,
yeah,
we didn't need
to
dread
like
making
those. I don't think anyone's suggesting it's, you know, the best way, full stop. But I think it really will address a desire in a lot of people. I know some.
I don't think it's going to go that far.
I don't know. I think it would be. Honestly, if I wasn't trying to save money and, you know, got home earlier in the day than I do, that's not that expensive, and I really like the idea of learning a new dish each night.
Yeah.
Learning a new dish with all the shit that I need to make it. No going to the butcher to try and get one thing and finding out they don't have it and trying to figure out what you can substitute it with or anything like that. Just it turns up with all the bits you need. Just stick it in the fridge and pull out the bits you need to make the dish you're going to make that night. I think it's a really cool idea that will work really well for a lot of people. Young professionals.
I don't think it's going to work.
Mm.
I don't think it's going anywhere. I think people are going to do it. All right. Well, I mean, I think it's probably interesting to begin with, and then people are just going to be like, oh, whatever. I'll just get something on the way home. I mean, people who are allegedly too busy to prepare to cook. They don't want to cook. They don't want to do this stuff.
No, that's
if you want to do these things, you make the time to do it. I mean, there's not a lot of planning is involved in an ordinary meal.
Yeah, well, there is, because you have to sit down.
No, there's not.
You know, usually, think about it. If you wanted to, if you just went to a cookbook and got the five meals that they're going to send you, found the five recipes
that
they're going to send you.
That's not necessarily the way to go about it.
But listen, like, because this is, you know, most people do a shop once a week. You find that at the beginning of the week, Sunday or something, you sit down with your cookbook, you pick out five dinners you're going to make that week, and then you make a shopping list and you have to go to the supermarket and get all those things. I think that's where a lot of people fall down.
They fall down because they're making that fundamental mistake. The idea that a dish needs to be so specific, and even just from a recipe, that is mistaken. You know, get a protein, get some vegetables, cook them all correctly, and it'll be delicious.
People want to challenge themselves to be
better cooked, to
learn to cook new things, to learn new techniques. You watch a show like MasterChef. You look how popular a show like MasterChef is, and people are watching it because there's a certain voyeuristic aspect of watching people do these interesting meal things that you've never thought to do or haven't ever tried to do. And I think this,
or mostly don't want to do,
kind of pushing people in that direction.
Yeah. Well,
and I think there's a lot of people who watch MasterChef, for example, who would probably love this.
Well, they'll know who this woman is, for one thing.
Exactly. I think it'll work. I don't think it's a solution for everyone, but I think it's going to work pretty well for a reasonable chunk of some market. I don't know what market it is. I was going to say the market, but I don't know what the market in this case is. So a market.
Yeah.
A market of people who buy food on the internet.
Yeah. I guess another thing, I mean, I want to choose the meat that I want to choose it. I don't want to be sent some random snapper. I want to catch a snapper. I mean, our freezer is full of snapper. You know, we don't need to be sent.
I've got a chest freezer, just saying.
We don't need to be sent unknown stuff. You know?
I think that's another part of the selling point in this is that they, you know, go to lengths to procure good quality ingredients.
Oh yeah, that's what they're telling you. That's all just marketing.
Oh yeah, but I mean, well, no, it's probably not. I mean, probably, you know, they're procuring the same ingredients that a restaurant would procure because they're buying it through the same
wholesaler. Just like absolutely everyone. Everyone gets all their stuff from the same fucking places.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's probably good stuff. I haven't tried it. No one sent me one. I haven't asked for one. I'm not going to buy one.
You've been trying to wangle your way into one by saying, "Oh, Deborah, you're so clever."
No, I'm trying to get her to give me a Galaxy tablet.
So I don't even know if we can agree that the PR went particularly well, because the backlash was pretty, that was much rowdier than anyone saying, "Oh, this is such a great idea." There was a lot more people saying, "What the fuck? Shut up. That, but what is this? Is this paid? Should you be saying that this was paid for?"
I think, and that's
you corrupted bastards.
I made in my various internet postings. Yeah. I think the only reason that backlash happened is because a bunch of people ended up tweeting about it at the same time. And fundamentally, that comes down to the fact they were all given a product to make dinner
on the same day.
Dinner time tends to happen, you know, in a short space of time. If the deliveries had been staggered out to those people over, you know, over a week or something, it probably would have caused less ruckus.
Yeah, I think that would have worked better.
And inherently, I don't have a problem with people giving, you know, Twitter people free stuff, as long as you're not, you know, it doesn't come with specific strings. You're not going to say, "I'm going to give you this thing, but you need to tweet nicely about it." What you're going to do is...
You can say that if you want. Twitter is not like anything else. Twitter, because you choose who you follow. If people talk about shit you don't want to hear about, you don't fucking follow them.
Well, if they don't feel genuine, if it feels like they've turned a weird corner in that way, you just unfollow them.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, from a marketing perspective, you pick people who are going to like your product, and then you give them a good product, and hopefully... because they tweet about everything they do in their day-to-day lives, they'll tweet nice things about it.
Yeah.
Just seems likely.
Mm.
It's the gist of it.
Mm. All right, good enough. Where's this other thing that I wanted to talk about? Oh, man, this app. Oh, my God, what is it doing? Oh, everything's gone crazy. Everything's gone mad over here. All right, never mind. So apparently the weather lately, have you noticed the sunsets and the days are lovely and they feel long and warm and it is so nice and dry. And many people in the country, possibly in the world, will be like, well, you know, dry, awesome. I mean, that's nice. But this is Auckland. It does actually rain here. The weather, generally speaking, is very good on a day-to-day basis. But, you know, even on a beautiful day, it can rain in the middle of it for a few minutes at least. But lately, none of that. Lately, everything is pretty much dead and brown. I saw a photo from the top of Mount Eden today, and it was just, it looked like Canterbury. It looked completely rooted.
Yeah. Mount Eden itself or?
Yeah, up on Mount Eden.
Yeah. Yeah, fucking thing though. I still have to mow my damn lawn. Stupid lawn.
Just
die already.
Have you been watering it?
No. There's a certain type of grass we have in the front yard that sends up these little sprouts for some reason.
Kukuya.
Yeah, who knows? I don't know. It's annoying.
Yeah.
I don't like mowing lawns. I was kind of hoping that the dryness would stop the lawn growing.
Yeah. Yeah, the problem with pasture growth, a lot of it has to do with soil temperature. And soil temperature would be pretty good right now. It'd encourage it pretty nicely. Yeah. Other things that have happened this week, many.
Name three. Oh my God, Top Gear, driving on the beach. It's so upsetting.
Oh yeah, that's right. The Top Gear thing. I've got the story for that. Oh God, I can't.
I have no story. What I do have is I went to onenews.co.nz because they said Top Gear presenters James May and Jeremy Clarkson have arrived in the country.
Yeah.
And, you know, you go there and they've got video footage. It's just raw video, unedited, yeah, with no sound. It's like 6 minutes of them just getting in a helicopter.
So here's the thing. I thought they were just doing one of their silly drives around on the beach thing. But it turns out that they're actually racing an America's Cup yacht from Coromandel to Northland.
I think there's two things. I think they're going to do the drive on the beach thing tomorrow, probably for... Well, that would be wrong. The beach would be on the wrong side. Maybe the yacht goes around the top. That seems weird. And maybe they're separate. It might be a separate thing.
Well,
but
maybe,
yeah,
there's some fakery.
Racing an America's Cup yacht.
Yeah, that sounds friggin' cool.
Yeah, but it'll be, you know...
Maybe the return leg is down the beach.
Maybe. It's quite, I mean, it's, you know, it's good publicity as long as they're not, I mean, they're going to be dickheads. But
oh, actually.
Jeremy Clarkson's going to be a dickhead because Jeremy Clarkson's a dickhead. But
well, maybe. Did you just watch the two-episode Africa special?
No.
Not very much dickheadedness from Jeremy Clarkson. It was actually all very good mannered. Okay.
Yeah. Apparently he angered some Australians for some reason. Don't know what he did. They're pretty easy to anger.
Called them convicts. Get over it, Australia. Come on. And if you're going to get upset about that every fucking time it happens, stop making sheep jokes. It's stupid. I have never shagged a sheep. No, I've never even wanted to. And I have had opportunities because I come from a farming family. And they'd pass one around, you know, at parties.
No, yeah, I know. No, not for me.
I was actually...
Look, but you just kind of changed the topic.
When I was little... I would just kind of roam around. Now it's probably against occupational safety and health. Sometimes I would just roam with a rifle. Other times I would just roam. And one time I got menaced by sheep and hid up a tree. They were being really aggressive. I was little, though. I was probably much too small to be just wandering around freely. But, you know, the world was a different place. It was possible to take, you know, a certain degree of risk. You know, not that there's a great deal of risk walking across open fields.
You never know, generally speaking. Some farms are pretty risky in strange ways.
Or swimming in a creek, unsupervised. Oh, golly. Why didn't I drown hundreds of times? Because I knew how to fucking swim and it was a creek. The things today, I think, are broken. Not enough risk.
Yeah. My father used to tell me ridiculous stories about growing up on a farm. Just insane stories. The time he set fire to the Bowser shed, he and his friends shooting 22s across a gully at each other.
Oh, Jesus.
rolling the tractor. And I think about these stories he told me now, and I'm just like, holy shit.
I've never shot a 22 at a person. That sounds absolutely insane.
It was a thing. He nearly chopped his brother's hand off with an axe.
Right.
Awesome.
Did he think he'd been bitten by a zombie, or was he trying to save him before it spread into his arm?
No, his brother was trying to get into his treehouse or something, I think.
Right, well, fair enough then. Stay out. A man's treehouse is his castle, especially if that man has an axe.
There was putting a 22 bullet in a vise and hitting it with a hammer.
Ah, that's fine. Bullets need a barrel before they will get up to a real speed.
When you put a 22 bullet in a vise and hit it with a hammer, it explodes in all fucking directions. Bits of shrapnel go everywhere.
Right, so it's not the expected outcome at all if you're just messing around. Wow.
Bad idea.
I remember I never rolled a tractor, but one time I was much too small to see over the steering wheel, but I was put in charge of driving a ute while a little bit of hay bales were being gathered up onto the back of it. And as I couldn't see, I proceeded to immediately drive up onto and strand the ute on the first bale I possibly could. And I had no idea what I was doing. And they were like, "You drive." I'm like, "I'm 8 years old. I don't know how to drive." I'm from Auckland. I don't live here.
I got the job of following behind the cows up the race to the milking shed on the quad. And that was fine until we got to the bit where it's concreted. And of course, you know, I'm driving 200 cows or something ridiculous and they've been shitting everywhere.
Yeah.
So the concreted bit is completely covered in cow shit as they are.
Yeah.
Cow shit is very slippery.
Yeah.
And doesn't offer much grip for a quad bike at all.
Yeah.
And it was one of those ones that has the accelerator. It's not like a twist grip.
It's a thumb.
Yeah. So when I kind of freaked out and started to skid in the cow shit, what I did is I just clenched my whole hand.
Oh, no.
So I locked the front wheel brake, but also gun the back wheel.
Oh!
And crashed the quad straight into a fence post.
Yeah. So it sounds like it was only a rear wheel drive. I think
I
it would have made it if it was
forward. I did put the brakes on it. It certainly did skid because I had no steering.
Yeah.
So who knows? Man. It was awful.
Quads are so much fun, also a bit dangerous. The first time, not a quad. I don't think I've ever crashed a quad. Only ridden quads a little bit. They were not treated as toys on our farms.
They are not toys.
Riding a scooter when I was about 9 or 10 years old, a Vespa. So, you know, you pull the clutch and then you twist the handle with the clutch on it to select gear.
Yeah.
And I knew that if you wanted the engine to stop engaging, you'd pull the clutch, right? And so I was driving around a school in Bonsonby and I was coming up on a corner a little bit too fast. And so I pulled the clutch in and then I was very, very surprised when I didn't slow down at all. Because it's not a fucking brake. And so now I was just sort of freewheeling. And I go straight past the corner that was, you know, there's no way I was going around it. Down a bank and across a playing field. All the way going like, I have no idea what I'm doing. You know, because the foot brake is a strange thing. It's sort of in the middle of the step through a bit. And I guess I just, you know, I was used to riding a BMX.
And
not a scooter.
The problem is if you release the clutch at any point, you're going to re-engage the engine.
And now, actually, it would be fine because I would release it gently. As it was then, what I did was I low-sided. I didn't push any brake at any point. I just kind of planted it and then tumbled, and everything went a bit wrong, and then I wasn't really allowed to ride the scooter again.
Sounds like the best way to do it.
Yeah. I mean, no one got hurt. The thing wasn't smashed, but geez,
I'm trying to think
scary.
Who I watched ride a motorbike into a fence. In a similar sort of situation,
That was in the downstairs car park of IHUG on Newton Road.
No, I didn't see that one. I saw a different one. I'm pretty sure it was at.
I remember Matthew Oram crashing a scooter
at a place. No, this was a motorbike.
I remember David Lilienthal crashing a scooter. I remember there was a guy
ones.
Called. He actually broke his arm. There was a guy called Dylan Reeve who crashed a motorcycle on camera.
No, it wasn't that.
No, it wasn't that.
No, different thing.
He broke his arm, and I've seen the X-rays.
Yeah.
What a knob!
Oh, it's terrible.
What a knob!
Yeah, I wouldn't want to see that on the internet.
No, definitely not. Wouldn't want to name your 48 Hours team after the incident.
No, I wouldn't want to reference it frequently
for the next 10 years.
Yep.
Every day. Sometimes things going wrong, you know, it's amusing for other people. Other times, things going wrong is what fucks everyone else off. For instance. Electronic Arts released SimCity this week, and it didn't go very well. In fact, it went so poorly that the negative reviews on Amazon were so prolific that Amazon withdrew it from sale. Electronic Arts have now promised to give a free game to everyone who purchased it before, I think, the 8th of March. By way of apology, but who knows what the fuck the game's going to be? It's going to be a piece of shit, I guess.
So there's so many interesting issues with this, though. The primary problem that they had was that their entire DRM system is based on an always online connection. You have to have a connection to the server.
Yeah.
Which means if you sell a fucking shit ton of games...
You need a lot of server
all at once. And all these people are going to be really excited about playing these games, and they're all going to try and join at once, and your servers are going to shit themselves, and no one can play.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened. The bigger thing, I think, is the problem, though, is that DRM requires those servers to be online for you to be able to play the game.
Forever.
And in 2 years, when EA or Origin, or no, what are they? It's EA, it's Maxis.
Maxis, yeah.
Who, when they decide that they're tired of that game now, when they EOL it, you can't buy it anymore, they'll just turn the servers off.
Yeah, they might
Then the game you bought 2 years ago and have been playing happily for 2 years, whenever you get a chance, like The Sims that people have been playing for fucking ever, even the original one.
Yeah. And SimCity.
It'll just stop working. Yeah, I played SimCity 2000 like within the last year.
Yeah. And frankly, it's probably just about as good. I actually got two copies of SimCity and I've never had any server problems at all. But there's a whole lot of design things that just... The game's not actually finished, frankly. spent a lot of money to discover that it's sort of an inferior experience compared to a lot of the previous games. The being always online thing, part of that is that you can also only play specific maps. So every previous version, you could generate terrain.
Yeah.
And you could also generate terrain of, you know, varying sizes, small cities up to very, very large maps. And now they're all, you know...
30 minutes.
Pre-made, and they're all tiny. And it's really, it's not a satisfactory experience playing the game at all. Also, one of the reasons that they claim that the always-on thing is necessary is that they're doing a lot of processing on the server, which is clearly bullshit. It costs far less to do processing on the gamer's computer than it does to provide a server for millions of people to play on. It is an absolute, obvious, bald-faced lie.
Distributed computing, as you use.
It is a complete lie, and the evidence that it's obviously a lie is that some people who have lost their connection have then been able to continue playing. So the claim that there's fucking number crunching going on the server is bullshit. So I predict that when they end of life it, hackers will just release a crack. I mean, there's probably a crack already.
Anyway.
There probably is a crack already, you know.
Yeah.
As long as you don't mind playing by yourself. And, you know, it's all right that I can play it with my girlfriend. But the communication tool isn't very good. The Origin thing that they make you use, this is Electronic Arts equivalent of Steam, and it's junk by comparison. It's a piece of shit. It doesn't have built-in voice chat, which is really what I hoped they, you know, they'd have something like that. So we ended up just using Skype.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's all ass.
I think I have this problem with, I mean, I understand the desire that companies have for DRM, right? You don't want your product ripped off, but that's just every time, every form of DRM, the only people really who suffer from the DRM are the legitimate consumers. They're the only ones who have to go through that shit. Once the pirates figure out a way to crack it, and there almost always is a way to crack it, unless you can control, you know, every aspect of it. Like, you know, on a PS3, I don't think you can pirate games on a PS3.
Bet you can.
Maybe. But, you know, at that point you've got, you know, you're controlling the platform and the operating system and the game. At that point you've got a reasonable chance. But on a PC, you can't fucking keep people out of that. They're going to find a way in.
All right, so...
And once they do... They get a better experience than the people who have paid money for the game.
As of 3 years ago, it was possible to get a PlayStation 3 mod chip so you could play so-called backup games.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
I'm sure that doesn't... Anyway, who cares? But the point is really that it's just, you know, there's a balance to be struck between respecting your consumers and accepting that there are some people who are just going to not pay for your shit.
Yeah.
But then, even then, you get the concept, and it's been measured in you know, certainly in films and TV, is that even those people who don't pay for your shit,
yeah,
are likely to generate positive word of mouth that still ends up earning you a profit.
Yeah.
Now, instead, by implementing this arcane DRM system, all you do is generate a massive amount of negative word of mouth for your product, and make it harder for consumers to play.
Yeah, the
dumb.
Much of the research lately seems to suggest that people who pirate are actually the people who also spend the most. So they might take some stuff without paying for it, but they pay more than an average non-pirating person for other stuff. Once upon a time, I downloaded every game that I played. You know, once upon a time, I never paid for games. But now, and for years, I wouldn't even really consider downloading a game now. I mean, illegally, obviously, I buy games on Steam all the time. And I've got such a huge pile of games. I'm such a good customer. And having been, you know, a downloader before, I am so familiar with how good the experience is. It is so much nicer to play pirated copies of games because you don't ever need to put a disc in and you don't need any keys or cracks. There's no messing around. It just works. You know, it just goes right away. It's like the classic, there was a sort of a flow chart of what the experience is like watching a downloaded movie versus watching a Blu-ray. You know, so you put a Blu-ray in and you fire it up and you get unskippable legal threats and sometimes unskippable trailers and some stupid menuing system that you have to click around in. And then eventually you get to the game and that's probably where you'll get another threat and maybe you'll get another trailer before your movie even starts. And the person who downloaded it, they just started the movie. Yep, no messing around.
Done.
Yeah. And yeah, so and why treat your customers like shit?
It's the thing. It's the thing I don't get about, like, the. It frustrates the hell out of me. I understand the concern from a business point of view, but you have to back off a little bit. It's like the other thing was like Jetstar. Like, at least three people on my, you know, in my group of Facebook friends in the last 2 or 3 months have had the same problem with Jetstar, where they've booked a ticket, you know, a while in advance, them and a friend to travel somewhere.
Yeah.
And this happens with all the airlines, but them and a friend to travel somewhere, and then get a bit closer, their friend suddenly can't make it anymore. Other commitments have come up, so they found another friend who wants to go, who'll buy the ticket off the first friend. They want to change the name on the ticket, which can be done.
Yeah.
It's a $40 fee, but you also have to pay the difference in fare.
Yeah.
Now, the argument, of course, is that, and it's a fair argument, is that in doing that, they prevent people from scalping tickets, essentially buying up a bunch of cheap tickets and then on-selling them later at a profit.
Yeah.
But surely you can stop people doing that.
Just detect people who do it a lot.
Yeah, stop people doing that while still trying to treat your customers as though they're people who you would like to have repeat business from.
Yeah.
Like, how hard is that? Charge them the $40. Say, glad we could help you. Here you go. Hell, waive the $40 if they're a frequent flyer.
Yeah. For our Christmas Day return flight from Christchurch to Auckland, it cost less just to book several different flights to get different times during the day than to change the first flight to a later flight.
Yeah.
So it would cost less to fly twice than to change one ticket. So, I mean, fuck that. Seriously, guys.
That's still, I just don't, you know.
But it was also very cheap.
Especially in a time of social media when people, the first thing that someone will do when they have a shit experience is they will go to Twitter or Facebook.
And they'll tell between 600 and 4,000 people.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And they'll tell them all, and those people will all remember that.
Yeah.
Some of them will get involved and share their shit experiences as well, or retweet it. You know, just try and be nice to your customers. How fucking hard is that?
Yeah, for some people,
especially
it seems
if they're
really
customers
hard.
You want to keep taking money from.
Yeah.
Like, sure, you lose a bit of money on this one thing, but treat them nice and they'll come back. Fuck, it's just, I don't understand how this stuff is so hard.
Yeah.
But
they make it look hard, don't they? They make it look hard. I mean, it could just be, you know, that one key person can make all the difference. You know, you and I have been in meetings with marketing people where bad ideas, we're going to go ahead. And some good ideas we killed as well. But bad ideas were on the table and we said, nah, bad idea, mate. You know, you got to have technical people or people who know how things actually work to straighten shit out sometimes. Just say,
also people
do
who
it
are
right.
People who are not so stuck in business bullshit that they can actually say, hang on, let's just exercise some common sense.
Yeah.
Like that just seems. And I assume that the bigger the company, the harder that is to do, of course, because, you know, you introduce more and more people and more risk-averse people. No one wants to be responsible for the company losing any money.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
The bigger they are, the harder they fall, and they don't come much bigger than a Dutch MMA fighter called Stefan Struve. So you don't even know I've already started a new story. That's how good my segues are. So for people who watch UFC, if you watch the UFC on, Heat TV, the Fox version, rather than the other one that we're used to, you will have seen a fight between New Zealander Mark Hunt and this Dutch guy, Stefan Struve. Stefan Struve is 6'11" and change. He is a giant monster. Mark Hunt, I don't know how tall Mark Hunt is. I don't think Mark Hunt is a little guy. Let me see. I want to know what his stats are. Mark Hunt, MMA. How tall are you, mate? I want to know, is there a Wikipedia? Is it going to tell me how tall he is? He's 125 kgs. He's not a little boy, but he's not 7 feet tall. It was like watching, he's 5'10". So it's a 5'10", 125 kg man versus a 7 foot tall, 120 something kg man. And if you remember in about, when was it, 2000, 2001, when David Tua fought Lennox Lewis, it was embarrassing, right? We watched just round after round of Lennox Lewis doing his boring, turtling jabs into David Tua's head, round after round after round, watching David Tua just not able to decipher the problem that was in front of him. And then in the last 10 seconds of the last round, David Tua just launched himself at the guy and managed to get, I think, the only fucking strike in the whole damn match that went the full distance. Well, so that's what I kind of expected to see again. It's like, you know, this person with like an extra foot of reach, how do you defeat that? Well, the way you defeat that is if you're Mark Hunt, is you just launch yourself with every single punch. And then even people who like UFC should definitely watch this fight, because it was amazing watching this short guy throw this fucking monster and just throw him and then jump on top of him and slipping around and moving so fast. He's a big dude, you know, stocky dude, and he was moving so fast. He was lithe. And then he smashed the guy's jaw so bad. Stefan Struve, all these people are on Twitter. Stefan Struve posted x-rays showing the big gap between the two halves of his jaw where it had been, you know, splintered and bashed apart. God, it was a great fight. Anyway, from Stuffco NZ, which I don't think they normally talk about UFC, tough fight ahead for Kiwi UFC star, because he's going to fight Junior Dos Santos. And UFC people will know that that's a pretty big deal, because that's, you know, that's serious. He's the number two best in the world in UFC and heavyweight. So it's possible that Mark Hunt could become, he could become champion.
So
He's got to win two more fights to get
I've
there, but
never been able to get into any sport that involves people hitting other people. It never has appealed to me. The only possible exception, and even that only a little bit, is professional wrestling, because there's an awesome amount of theatrics and choreography to it. I just don't like watching. I've just never really been into watching people beat each other up.
Yeah, I hate. I don't. It's not called WWF anymore. What's it called now? WCW. WWE. That shit sucks. This shit is so much better. You know, it's people who can actually fight, actually fighting.
I think perhaps we're comparing apples to purple.
Yes. Yep. Exactly. Exactly that. I like UFC a great deal. I'm not really a fan of the ground and pound stuff. You know, the meted up faces and blood absolutely everywhere, but you know, I take that along with the grappling, and you know, just the general skill. One thing that you see in UFC is you know, in boxing, if you knock someone out and they fall on the ground, you can't hit them. But in UFC, if you knock someone out and you fall on the ground, and they fall on the ground, you're kind of an idiot if you don't go after them and keep punching them until the ref says you've got to stop. And that, I don't like that, because sometimes people are clearly punching someone who's knocked out. Usually they only get one strike in, or maybe two, but it's still, I don't like that. But I like pretty much everything else about it. It's great fun. I don't know, you know, having fought quite a bit myself, you know, I guess, you know, that'll probably have taken away some of the taboo of, you know, watching people hitting other people.
Yeah.
But I can understand why people don't like it. You know, the girl is much better than I am. She's an amazing grappler, and she can just put me on the ground really easily. And she doesn't like it. So just being a fighter is not enough to make you like this stuff. Luckily, there's room for MasterChef and for UFC in the world. Something there's for me is police officers changing their uniform badge numbers to hide their identities while they're engaged with kind of clearing up violent public protesters and so on. This instance was at Occupy when they were cleaning them out of Auckland Aotea Square. A bunch of the officers changed their numbers.
Was it three or four of them, I think, were implicated?
They all used the same number, which was really stupid of them. Essentially nothing's happened.
Didn't the Independent Police Conduct Authority said, not very good, we're a bit busy.
Yeah. Oh, there were three officers. Apparently there was some kind of pre-mediation thing. They've claimed it's just sort of a performance issue. The so-called Independent Police Conduct Authority has decided that the three officers' behaviour was not serious enough to warrant its attention, saying investigators were too busy dealing with cases involving death and bodily harm. I would suggest several things. Number one, get more investigators then. And number two, don't use police officers as your investigators.
Yeah, the Independent Police Conduct Authority has been criticised at many different levels by many different people for not being independent.
Independent enough, yeah.
And not conducting enough. They are police and they have authority.
Yeah.
That's about it. Yeah, it is silly. It seems silly the way the IPCA is structured. I think there should be some other form of oversight, maybe, you know, former judges or lawyers or who the hell knows.
45 minutes. Yeah.
But the other thing is, I mean, yeah, it's a dumb, I don't think they should be fired. Like, I don't think they should lose their jobs, but it's, you know, they should be kicked in the ass in some formal policey way.
Yeah.
Because it's against their code of conduct.
Yeah.
And it's, you know.
The police commissioner said that while the employment investigation found no malicious intent, their actions fell below the standards of professionalism he'd expect. Come on, mate.
Yeah, although, interestingly enough, he seemed pretty unimpressed by it when it was first reported, so yeah. I do wonder if at some other level they did get a less official kick in the ass.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
I don't know.
Because he seemed to understand, you know, how completely unacceptable it was. I remember in the 90s in police protests, you know, the cops used to try and push their little shirt badges back a little bit so they were hard to read.
Yeah.
It's just dickish. I mean, you know, I don't think the police... There are people who are always anti-police at every protest, and I think that's shit.
Yeah.
Because there are also people at every protest who want to incite violence, yeah. And it needs to be recognised. I think that there are some fuckwits there who, frankly, the police should be dealing with.
Yeah.
Generally
speaking, the police have nothing to do with most protests. So making them your target, that seems really stupid.
They usually, like, I remember there were a lot of people were very angry at the police for, quote, being corporate cronies and standing outside the Sky City Theatre, the Sky City Grand, preventing protesters from getting into the, what was it, TPP negotiations. It's like, well...
They were going to trespass.
Yeah, there's a bunch of people who have made it quite clear they want to trespass on this private property and disrupt a meeting that is, you know, entirely legal.
Yeah.
We can't just allow that to happen.
Yeah. The thing with allowing any violence in a protest is that it makes it easier for the police to sneak agent provocateurs in, which I don't know that it happens a lot here, but, you know, there's quite clear evidence of it happening.
Certainly has in England. Occupy stuff in the UK and the US.
Yeah.
I don't think it happens here because, you know, every protest I've ever been in or near or witnessed, there seems to be enough actual people who are fuckwits and want to start a fight.
Yeah, stupid.
I don't think the police particularly need to
send
anyone else in.
I hate that stuff. It's so stupid.
Yeah, I also hate the way protests get hijacked by causes that have nothing to do with the protest whatsoever.
Yeah.
I dislike that.
Mm. So completely. Wait, is there any other stuff that we can talk about?
Segue carefully. You can do it.
Later that.
Even you.
I believe I can fly. George W. Bush. New blue to stop hunting tragedies.
New what?
All right. So for a long time in New Zealand, we've had a problem with people accidentally shooting other humans when they thought that they were shooting at deer.
Oh, hunting tragedies.
What did you think I said?
I thought you said punting tragedies, and I was like, I don't remember.
We don't have a lot of canals, do we? What's this about?
I don't remember anyone. It was in the Avon. Did they drown? Did they fall out of the punt and drown?
Mm. So for a long time we've had, I guess it's called something like blaze orange, but that looks a little bit like some kinds of deer, apparently, and so hunters still were getting shot in the head. A certain amount of research has been done by the New Zealand Mountain Safety Council's Colour Recognition Project to figure out what hunters can do, how hunters can dress, so that they can be camouflaged to animals, but so that people will be able to easily identify them. And what they've found is that there is this blaze blue. And so now, I guess, hunters are going to start wearing that. It looks sort of like... Some countries have camouflage, urban camouflage that looks sort of like this sort of blue. Maybe a little bit brighter than that, though. Anyway, so hopefully this will stop people from getting shot, because it seems to happen too much. Like a couple of times every season, it seems like hunters shoot other hunters.
It's not complicated. Like the first, you know, well, maybe it is. I don't know. I've not been hunting, but
identify your target.
I know the rules of shooting. You don't shoot things unless you can identify your target clearly.
Yep. Part of the problem is that I mean, hunting in dense bush is part of it, but also hunting with very high powered weapons that can shoot quite a long way. You know, if you're hunting with I'm just guessing now. But if you are hunting with shotgun slugs, say, which have a relatively shorter accurate range, I bet that would make you less likely to accidentally shoot someone, just because you have to get a bit closer. I wonder how often bow hunters accidentally shoot other humans. I bet that's not very common.
I'm pretty sure I remember someone being shot with an arrow in the last couple of years in one of the hunting seasons.
Oh, bloody hell. My conjecture might not have worked, but
maybe that's different.
Yeah. I mean, we hear about people accidentally getting shot with crossbows just in suburbs, people firing at a fence and there, surprisingly enough, the bolt going straight through and hitting a neighbour. But I haven't heard much about the hunting. Maybe it's just because there's relatively little of it done here, you know, relatively speaking. Anyway, new blue to stop hunting tragedies. There's that. Other tragedies, apparently Google Glass.
It's a tragedy?
I mean, I don't know that it's a tragedy, frankly, but even before it's been released, there's one Seattle bar has banned them, and they've said that any patrons that try to enter while wearing Google Glass will be refused entry, and actually has been suggested that an ass-kicking will be encouraged for people who violate their rule. So I guess that is that's Seattle.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because in theory, at some point in the next, I don't know, decade, technology like wearable cameras and or displays will become much more common. And when can you no longer discriminate?
There are some real privacy risks here. If a person that you're looking at could be videoing you or taking photos of you and or your children and or your wife or daughter, it's just as likely that they could be doing that as that they, you know, just have their email inbox up.
Yeah, of course.
And so there's going to be some new etiquette is going to be required, you know, like, so there'll have to be indicator lights, which just, you know, can't reasonably be
LED
disabled.
Little glasses that always, it'll be, I don't know. I just think it's kind of unavoidable. At some point, you know, we're going to have, there's either going to be a technology where you can have an implant in your eye, or we find a way to actually record vision from the human nervous system, you know, like at some point we're going to get to the point where people can record everything they see and do with almost no outward signs of doing so. I mean, what do you do?
Will it make, surprise nightclub toilet cubicle blowjobs more likely or less likely?
I am going to say it will leave them unchanged, but the etiquette about securing those blowjobs will have to change.
Yeah. Take your fucking glasses off and put them on an inside pocket.
Maybe.
For instance. Yeah. There is nothing like a nightclub toilet blowjob.
Nothing.
Nothing like it. And at Kodak, there's nothing like profit.
Is Kodak still... do they still exist?
Their annual loss, they've just announced, for 2012, $1.38 billion.
Because they filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection, which is something that says we can't pay our bills, we need to restructure our company, don't close us down. Is that? I don't know.
That's pretty much right. I think that's how it is.
Yeah, it turns out that that Kodak, despite owning a shitload of valuable intellectual property...
They don't know what to do with it.
I feel saying that out loud.
Yeah.
Did not... get on board the right technologies at the right times.
And they were an early digital camera player.
Yeah,
I remember.
The first digital camera I used was Kodak.
Yep. Funny little thing. Didn't take very many photos.
Is the thing that comes to mind.
They were about 640 by 480, and they took great big compact flash cards, as I think. Is that right?
I have no idea.
Or did they have internal memory and need to be plugged in?
No, they must have had internal memory. I don't think compact flash.
But they had like 4 megabytes of storage. Or maybe it was one. And they were kind of junk. And the picture quality was nowhere near the quality of a film camera. And so it was really only insane early adopters that embraced them.
I think the Kodak DC20 would have been the one I used first.
Yeah, that was someone beginning with J's.
Yep, and it was from about 1996, and the maximum resolution had no built-in flash, and CCD sensor had a maximum resolution of 493 by 373 pixels.
Wow.
I think it actually produced a 320 by 240 image.
Right.
Something like, no, maybe 480 by 320 or something like that.
Wow.
Yeah, it was shit.
And they weren't actually inexpensive either.
No. Although,
less than a DSLR now, of course, but they weren't DSLRs. They were little point-and-shoots.
Yeah, it was. Although when it first came out, that's why it was the first sort of real big consumer one, and that it was only $300 compared to like well over 1,000 for a lot of others.
Yeah.
So yeah, interesting. And then there was the Sony ones. Is the other one? I think it was the Sony Mavica with the
It had a floppy disk on it. Oh man, that's insane.
Covered at work.
Yeah. Yeah, that was absolute madness. Commenter Stephen Sheehan says they took floppies. That wasn't the Kodaks. That is the Sonys that we're talking about now. Unless you are a really fast typer. But the comment came up, I think, before we started talking about Mavicas. Anyway. So Kodak, they should have just gone for it. I mean, just have two businesses, do the film thing until that goes away, and the film cameras, you know, for as long as you can. But just do digital as well. You don't need to back only one horse. But they seem to have really tried. You know, I guess the development stuff was a bit of a problem for them. They had such big investments in it, producing paper and films and, I don't know, maybe chemicals as well, I don't know what.
Well, I mean, there was a lot of that, and there was also, you know, all the development systems for the photo mats or whatever, you know, we called them here.
Yeah.
There was a lot of that stuff, and I guess as all that fell away quickly, there wasn't enough revenue left in the other things that were still working. Like film, they still make a lot of motion picture film, not for long. Not so much for shooting on.
Yeah.
But for distribution,
right? Yeah.
For master prints.
Yeah, that's all going to go away pretty soon.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think it'll probably end up maybe a bit like
vinyl.
The camera, the instant camera. What's the Polaroid? I think it'll end up a bit like Polaroid, where someone will end up buying the technology.
Oh, the Impossible Project.
Yeah. So someone will end up buying the technology facilities to keep producing the film, because I think there'll still be a demand. For a while, it'll peter off, but there'll still be demand for the film.
But it will be so expensive, you'd have to be out of your mind to use it.
Well, there, unfortunately, like if you, even modern digital films, if you want to archive them, one of the most solid archive methods, and it's still used constantly in Hollywood, is three-strip separations. Basically, they print each color channel onto a separate black and white film, on physical film, and put them in a, you know, big secure vault, and that's still the, because fundamentally all you ever need to get that back is light. You know, you can always get it back from light.
Yeah.
So it's a timeless archive, and they've been doing that three strip separation process for, you know, ever, and various types of film archives.
Yeah. Except that stuff rots. Oh, maybe the new stuff doesn't rot, but some of the older stuff rotted, stable. And it was also very flammable.
As long as you keep them in a good, they're not made of nitrate anymore.
Yeah.
As long as you keep them in a good storage facility.
Hard drives are a problem. Something's going to come along. Everything's a problem. Backups are a pain in the ass.
When do we get the fucking cube that stores
the crystal?
Like a petabyte of data.
Yeah, I don't know. But I need to.
Because I remember reading about that on Slashdot in like 1991. Probably not, because I don't think Slashdot existed then. But, you know, a long time ago.
Maybe Slashdot like...
the web didn't exist in 91.
Maybe like fusion or artificial intelligence. It's one of those things that's always between 20 and 50 years away, no matter when you ask.
Yeah.
Other things that are between 20 and 50 years away is sorting out the problems with NovaPay. But part of the problem has been solved by the government. They've started sending debt collectors to retrieve the overpayments that they've made to teachers.
Oh, good.
That doesn't seem heavy-handed at all.
You read something like that and you think, this must be a mistake. It must be some automatic system that's gone a little bit out of whack, and someone's going to see this and fix it. Yeah. Is that what it is?
I think they just want their money back, and and they're not very nice people, and they're covering their asses. I mean, it's possible that some teachers are like, "I'm not going to repay the money because you paid it to me, and now it's mine." That's One not minute. Actually reasonable, you know. Accidental payments, I think, you know, they need to be reversed.
There must be something more to the story. I've only read the headline. I haven't read the story. I can't comment with any reasonable thing.
Other things that will make you unreasonable is taking Gangnam-style acid, which apparently isn't a big problem in Australia at the moment. The police there have warned that there's a batch of LSD tabs printed with images of Psy, Gangnam-style creator, and they say that it's bad acid, basically. Don't take the brown acid, and don't take the Gangnam-style acid.
It'll make you do a weird horsey dance, and that's, yeah.
That's pretty much it. Apparently, and this is something that we've known for a long time, the time's just about to run out for the
Five.
Show.
Yeah. We've done Four. That for about an hour.
No, that for ages. Can't do it drunk.
Three.
Can't do it. Low energy.
Two.
Need more drink.
One.
See you next week. All right, after this. Goodbye.
You're we'll listening see. To The Weekly Show on with course.
We're using that one. So something we've known for several years is that zombies are more popular when things are going wrong in society, and it's followed a very interesting trend with ever since the 1970s zombies peak when things are bad, and it's true now, according to this story from Three News, and originally from where? AP. Zombies seem to be everywhere these days. And they've stayed around for a long time this time, don't you think?
Yes.
Lots of zombie games. Too many fucking zombie games. I mean, they even put zombies into Call of Duty. What the fuck? Seriously.
I find this... I see where this story's going, and I find it to be moderately bullshit, but we'll see.
I think it's absolutely true.
Okay.
Actually, there's someone we can talk to about this. We can talk to Phoebe Fletcher about this. She did her thesis on this kind of stuff, horror movies and stuff. I don't know that people know that. She wrote on Tumeke, but she's actually a really good person. and Tumeke might make you think otherwise. I think she's on the new daily blog probably as well. In the popular TV series The Walking Dead, humans struggle to escape from a pack of zombies hungry for flesh. That's not an accurate description. I would say it was more accurate to say that virtually everyone in the world is a zombie and they're all trying to kill the few humans that are left. I would say that describing it as a pack of zombies is not correct. It's a nation of zombies, at the very least. Prank alerts have warned of a zombie apocalypse on radio stations in a handful of states and across the country. Zombie wannabes in tattered clothing occasionally fill local parks. Gurgling moans of the undead. They're talking about the zombie walk stuff, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Right. Are these just unhealthy obsessions with death and decay? To Clemson University, I've never heard of Clemson University. Clemson University professor Sarah Lauro, the phenomenon isn't harmful or a random fad, but part of a historical trend that mirrors a level of cultural dissatisfaction and economic upheaval. So she teaches English. And she studied zombies while working on her doctoral degree, so actually the same as Phoebe Fletcher. At the University of California at Davis, which we actually have heard of, unlike Clemson. Laura said she keeps track of zombie movies, television shows and video games, but her research focuses primarily on the concept of the zombie walk, which are these mass gatherings where people dress up. Some take it more seriously than others, I guess.
Some probably take it way too seriously.
Yeah, way too seriously. Some of those cosplay girls, they'll ask, "Hoopla, hot, oh my God."
Hot zombie.
Yeah, hot zombie. Super hot zombie. Anyway, I think this is probably legit.
Yeah, I don't know. I just assume that it's basically people imitating culture. They've found something they like and it's relatively easy to imitate. I don't know.
That's only part of it. The fascination with zombies, there are clear trends in it.
Yeah.
I'm only agreeing with this because I've heard it before and I've heard it for several years now. That
Can you know, please explain vampires to me then? What the fuck does that represent?
That actually, it's a girl thing, isn't it? That's about fear of losing virginity, I think. That's about fear of boys. The sparkliness went away. The sparkliness was just to begin with.
It didn't even stay all the way through that whole film series, did it?
No, exactly. No, the sparkliness went away.
That film series, I'm not going to name it.
It's about girls afraid of the animal that's rising within them at puberty. That's the girls that were into those movies. And a few weirdo older women. but that's different. weirdo older people, they will always You know, they will always test a rule, won't they?
Yeah, but they've got 50 Shades of Grey now, so they don't need zombies anymore. Yeah.
Tell you what, I've really been enjoying The Walking Dead. And I do quite like some games with zombies in.
I have watched none of The Walking Dead, and I've played no zombie games.
Wow.
Clearly I'm more optimistic not even like Left 4 Dead. The future.
No Left 4 Dead.
No, I've barely played a video game in 8 years.
It's a terrible waste of time.
I know, and I don't have that much time to waste on things anymore.
Makes me feel very unproductive when I play games.
There's a very good reason.
Sometimes that's all right because it is, you know, blowing off steam while actually working on stuff, and other times it just completely replaces the working, which is, yep. You know, that's not great. Crime plummets after pie cart blaze.
I started to read that story, then I decided it was stupid and stopped. Is it stupid?
Probably. Judge blocks, and this is actually kind of interesting news, judge blocks New York City large soda ban. So Michael Bloomberg, tiny little man, but a billionaire, and mayor of New York City. He's very short, Dylan.
I understand.
He's very short. Short man syndrome, a little bit of that. But, you know, makes up for it with his – he can stand on his wallet. New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg vowed on Monday to appeal a judge's ruling that struck down his pioneering ban on large sugary drinks sold by the city's restaurants, movie theaters, and other food service businesses just a day before it was to take effect. It was a terrible rule, though. It was terrible because it meant that, for instance, a family couldn't get a jug of soft drink. They had to get individual cups.
Yeah, there were all sorts of very strange exemptions and things as well. It just seemed a dumb idea, frankly.
It was stupid and dumb and crazy and nanny state-ish because soft drinks are pretty bad. You know, people don't actually need soft drinks, but it's also no one's fucking business what you want to drink. You know, if you want to have a really big Coke, a giant cup of Coke with ice in it that rattles around... You know, it's got that condensation on the outside on a hot day. If you want a cup that's like 1.5 litres, who the fuck is anyone to tell you you can't have it?
The ban was on any drinks greater than basically 16 ounces, which is 0.5 litre, right. 500 mils.
Right.
And you couldn't buy a drink any larger than that in any restaurant, fast food, store, deli, movie theatre, sports stadium, or food cart.
Yeah.
But you could buy drinks bigger than that at convenience stores and grocery stores.
Yeah.
And you could also buy drinks bigger than that if they were at least 70% fruit juice.
Yeah.
Or if they contained alcohol.
Yeah.
Hey.
Well, I think part of the idea there with the exceptions was that those places sell bottles.
Yeah.
They have to be able to sell large vessels.
I don't know. It just seems the whole thing seems very arbitrary and silly. And it's
absolutely.
It's picking on one part of a complex issue, which... isn't universally a problem.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's been struck down. They're going to appeal it. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. So now
it
here's...
It like the sort of thing that'll last very long anyway. If Bloomberg loses his next mayoral election, surely the next mayor will overturn it, right?
Now, let's see. I think I've just been asked on by a commenter on the stream, not in the chat room, if we've... spoken about the Orcon sale, and we have not spoken about the Orcon sale, and I actually think that I didn't put any in my story list.
Do you know why I haven't spoken about the Orcon sale?
Because you don't know about it.
No, because I'm buying it. Orcon will be mine soon.
Oh yeah.
No, that's not true. It is largely because I didn't know about it. I saw a couple of stories today and I was like, oh, what? Okay. I don't know because I didn't really read the stories. Is Orcon confirmed to be for sale, or is it some people saying it's for sale?
The best information was on NBR, and they'd confirmed that someone was interested in it, and it is NBR site Vivid Networks that I've never heard of. Apparently, they're a tiny ISP, and I don't understand how they get to buy a company which, you know, presumably Cordia is going to sell it for more than they paid for it. I mean, that might not be true. This might be one of those examples of you know, government-owned organizations, which Cordia, the owner of Orcon, is. It might be one of those examples where they just do some stupid deal they buy something that works really well for a high price, and then a few years later decide they shouldn't be in that industry and sell it cheap. And you know who actually ultimately is paying for that? It's us. And strangely enough, sometimes when that happens, people who were involved from the government side of that deal end up with directorships in the new company. Strange that, isn't it? How odd.
We'll have to see what happens. I hope whatever does happen, nothing changes. I'm reasonably happy with the Orcon setup I've got at the moment. It works quite well. I don't pay for my data, and I'm using a lot of it at the moment.
I've never changed over to the unlimited plan that you're on. I stuck with the 200 gig plan because I just wanted it to stay fast.
I haven't noticed much difference. There's been one or two occasions where it's been a bit slow, but they've either been very short-lived or they've sorted it out very quickly.
Yeah,
so,
I never got that.
Yeah, never had a problem. I'm just going to now look and see how much data I've used this month.
Oh, geez, are we going to compare? Well, I bet yours is going to be more than mine then, given that I actually have a cap. Even though 200 gigabytes, it's a pretty big cap. Let's see, how do I log into this thing? What's my username? Oh, yeah, I can remember.
Oh, no, my predicted usage is only 180 gigs this month.
Come on and load, please, Orcon website. Let's see.
Although that seems... That's
my predicted usage at current rate, 113 gigabytes.
There you go.
You download too much, don't you?
No, at the moment that's probably almost all Netflix streaming.
Now, how nice is Netflix streaming? Is it, in terms of video quality, is it as good as TVNZ On Demand? Because TVNZ On Demand is so fucking good.
I don't know. I mean, I don't have a way of putting TVNZ On Demand on my TV.
Yeah.
And I don't watch Netflix on my computer.
Yeah.
It's adaptive, it seems to be. Like, some of them will start quite low res and then get better. I think my Apple TV still insists on, for some reason, showing even HD sources in 4x3. I don't know why that is. It's something to do with the Netflix app on Apple TV. Maybe if I updated my Apple TV, it would work. Then I probably wouldn't be able to run XBMC anymore.
Yeah.
So when I'm in the States, I'm going to get a Roku and see if that's any better.
Yeah.
And they're only $50 US, so I'll bring one back. See what it does. But overall, very pleasant experience and absolutely chock full of kids programming.
Like
heaps of it. So it's, you know, the kids quite enjoy it. There's some of the really good educational stuff on there, some just weird kid stuff. No Adventure Time, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever seen Adventure Time.
There's something funny that happens when you play stuff on a TV versus on a computer monitor. I guess it's just because you're sitting further away. But you can tolerate what would seem like real shit quality on a TV much more easily than you could on a monitor.
Yeah, absolutely. It probably is just you sitting further away. But
so it is quite hard to compare. I think that there's also quite different processing going on in most TVs. You know, I think some of them actually do quite a bit of work in the background there.
Often they certainly do it in default settings. You can turn a lot of that stuff off, but often they come out of the box with all manner of
crazy upscaling stuff and motion stuff and
artifact suppression and all sorts of things.
Yeah. A source at Cordia estimated that they hope to sell Orcon for as much as $80 to $90 million.
Probably worth it.
But
who knows?
The price may have been as little as $40 million. But they paid, I think, 24. So, you know, deal.
It really seems like the sort of business that's only going to get more valuable, right?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, you'd think so, especially considering there's been... they're like a magnet. They've just been acquiring ISP. I don't know if they've continued doing it, but for a long time...
the whole history of Orcon. That's how it started.
Yeah.
Like, CB just bought ISPs, just bought lots and lots of little ISPs and stuck them all together.
Yeah.
He was very good at it.
And there just aren't that many left. And people still need internet access. And, I guess I'd probably have to think back quite carefully. But, I mean, I remember my first internet connection was only something like $50 a month.
My first was 40. Definitely 40.
Definitely 40.
No, because it was the iHack Diamond plan that was $39.99 five.
That was the flat rate one?
It was the first flat rate dial-up plan.
I was an iHead customer before they released that. And I can't even remember what it was called. All those the ISP plans had such stupid names. Corporate Diamond Plus, Gold, Platinum and Bronze. Which sound like something now. It's like, oh, well, clearly that one's worth more than that one. But who can remember what the hell each of them was? Bronze probably was about 5 hours a month at one point. When I first started, I think it was by time.
Yeah, they were by time. It was the easiest way to manage them. It wasn't until broadband really came about that they started to measure data instead of time.
Yeah.
When you weren't dialing up anymore.
Mm.
Because, of course, they were paying for, you know, well, I guess time was the thing. They were paying for the, what were they paying for? No, you were paying for your phone call. No one was paying for anything at that point.
Yeah.
But anyway.
When Telecom decided that you had to use a special line, the 0867 and 0873 stuff came along. Man, that was on the inside of that. That sucked. Oh, there was one story that I really wish I'd gotten to during the. Well, I mean, it's all the normal show now. The end of the show doesn't really mean anything these days.
No.
Just kind of keep rolling. The story about this this parent whose daughter had been playing, you know, some Mario game in which she could play as. A female character. And then she started playing Donkey Kong, in which, of course, the female character is a victim. You know, the female character has no power and just stands there and waits to be rescued by the male character, Jumperman, right? And the girl wanted to be able to play as a female. And so this parent hacked the ROM and changed the roles around so that the daughter could play as a girl. I think that's really cool.
That is some fucking awesome parenting.
It's so cool. And unfortunately, this is only days after, what's the project called? Damn it. There was a Kickstarter project for a feminist sort of critique of modern culture. Feminist Frequency, I think. They've started to release YouTube videos, including about the damsels in distress in computer gaming, released 4 days ago. As it happens, I watched this the night before I heard about this Donkey Kong story, and it has a really interesting. And I suggest everyone watch it. It's had 800,000 views already, and it's you know, sort of political feminism analysis. So for it to have had 800,000 views, pretty fucking awesome. I reckon.
It's just chicks.
And it talks about the Mario games. It talks about Nintendo, as well as, you know, many, many other games.
Well, almost all of them for a period of time, surely.
That's right. And the fact that you really could not play as a girl. And girls Save are always princess. Victims. Yep, and girls are always victims. Girls are always powerless.
But there was Miss Pac-Man.
And it's pretty easy to see... you know, the truth and what this woman says. I don't remember.
Is it much better now?
I don't think so. No, I don't think it's much better now. It's a little bit better now because there are some female, there's some powerful female characters, right? Mm. But they tend to be presented also as still as sexual objects, while being strange. Powerful. You know, I mean, I don't mind spending time staring at Lara Croft's ass, but the important thing about her is that she is awesome.
She kicks...
But they couldn't help putting her in tiny little hot pants and a little tank top with her boobs bouncing up and down. They just couldn't help themselves. That stuff is not necessary. You know, you don't see many soldiers running around dressed like her.
I'm sure I saw something about Skyrim female armor and how ridiculous it is.
Yeah, and that's exactly the point. That's exactly the point, right? There is a problem with some kinds of men. Some kinds of men have these bizarre... they think that they're victims. Whenever a woman talks about women not being treated right, they think that's saying that men should be treated worse, when really what they're saying is that women should be treated better. And those are not the same thing.
People get very defensive unnecessarily about changes.
Insanely defensive. And so, for instance, if you go and look at these feminist frequency videos on YouTube, about gaming. The first one is called Damsel in Distress. The comments had to be turned off, right? On Twitter, I think that this woman, her name is Anita Sarkeesian. She's the host and she started the Kickstarter. They got $160,000-ish US dollars in their Kickstarter to make this series. Far more than I think they ever hoped to get. And a big part of that was that people tried to counter the insane backlash that she got. You know, literal death threats. If you look at some of the YouTube responses to her, it is insane. These men have lost their fucking minds. In fact, maybe I should just call them boys because they are pathetic. They are really pathetic. And so I don't know what the solution is, but part of it is if you are an abhorrent person, shut up.
I think this is like homophobia and a bunch of other things, that mostly those views are confined, hopefully limited to older generations, and they'll just eventually die out. People get more liberal is sort of the word, but just, I don't know, less closed-minded generationally as they, go on.
Yeah.
I think young people have an easier time accepting a bunch of these things that the next, the generation previous to them has a harder time accepting, and it'll just keep getting the same.
Well, I hope you're
and,
right.
And maybe in 20 years we'll be the ones sitting around going, oh, that's ridiculous, what the fucking people, PC gone mad.
Hedgehogs aren't as good as people.
About things our kids are going, don't be so dumb, Dad.
Dad, come on.
Don't say that. Fuck, they can hear you. Shut up.
She believes in the sun. She's a sunnist. And so you just got to, why are you being so dark?
Yeah. Oh, God, I'm looking forward to that day. Fuck. Oh, my children are going to be such shits.
Yep.
Oh.
Yeah. Yep. Don't know about the youngest one. Youngest one might be awesome.
No, they'll all be the same. They'll be like me.
No.
Oh, they will.
No, worse.
Well, yeah, obviously worse, because they'll be younger and I will be me.
Because, you think...
They will be like I am to my father.
Exactly. Your father is such a sweetheart and you're such a dickhead. And your sweetheart father raised a dickhead like you. Imagine what kind of child you're going to raise.
Oh, it's terrible.
Worse.
Oh,
well. You're going to have an amplifying effect.
Yep.
Your kids are cursed.
Well, no, I'm cursed.
Well, unfortunately, all of society is cursed with your children, though. I'm sure your kids are going to be lovely. Obviously, I've never had an opportunity to speak to the middle one, really.
Oh, you're welcome.
Doesn't really talk much.
Chat with
it sometime. But your eldest, he also seems like a sweetheart. So maybe it's like teen wolfism. Maybe it skips a generation sometimes.
Maybe we'll see.
Maybe.
I'll let you know.
Maybe it will. Scientists grow. Oh my God. I cannot believe this is true.
Why are we still going?
Scientists grow replacement human teeth in mouse kidneys. Oh my God. Because I've got stories still. When an
I'm
adult.
I'm actually deliberately not talking about this. This is.
It's horrific, isn't it?
I just. No, it was. Nothing.
When an adult loses a tooth, there's no hope of growing a new one because we're not sharks. Unless you've got a mouse kidney handy. In a new study, researchers injected human gum tissue extracted during oral surgery into the molars of fetal mice. After giving the cells a week to get used to each other, the scientists implanted the chimeric concoction into the protective tissue surrounding the kidneys of living mice. There, 20% of the cells developed into objects recognizable as teeth. Complete with the root structures missing from the artificial tooth implants, which are
ceramics.
No, well, apparently there's a problem with the implants, and that is that eventually the jaw, the hole that they're stuck in, apparently just sort of breaks down.
Okay.
Like as you chew and as they move and compress, just, it doesn't last long term. So apparently the next step, a step that I think they've not yet taken, is to transplant these so-called bio teeth, grown first in a fetal mouse and then later in a mouse's kidney. The next step is to transplant those back into human mouths and see if they grow into something that we can chew on.
With
be in that queue.
Yeah, me neither.
I'm missing a tooth, at least.
Are you?
Yeah. Oh, terrible teeth things. I had a root canal collapse, and then the rest of the tooth fucked up.
Oh, fucking hell.
But dentists are very expensive, and I'm afraid of them not for my teeth, but for my wallet.
Yeah.
It's a terrible situation.
No, you've got to do it.
I know.
Because the longer you leave it, the worse it's going to be. Because either
I'll just wait till they all fall out, and I can have dentures. Fuck it. Brilliant.
I mean, it's very easy for me to say that it sounds like a very bad idea because I haven't had many dental problems because I've been pretty fucking careful. But to me, it seems like a real bad plan.
Someone pointed out to me, so I wish someone had pointed this out earlier in my life, because I spent essentially the formative years of my life up until I'd grown my entire set of adult teeth living on tank water.
Yeah.
I had no fluoride at all at that point, except for, you know, a small amount through teeth brushing. I should have, the dentist pointed this out to me when I told them just in passing this.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you should have been using a really high fluoride toothpaste.
Yeah, some people take pills in that same situation.
That's fucking good to know now.
I'm surprised that you didn't know.
No, my parents probably didn't believe in fluoride at the time, I imagine.
That's because your parents are hippies.
They were probably surrounding my teeth with white light.
Yeah, well,
maybe I had crystals for my mouth. I don't know.
Well, you know, it didn't work.
It did not. It's fucking annoying. Because otherwise my teeth are perfect. I have really, really good...
Are they nice and straight?
Yeah, they're really well aligned. They're really good shape and size. But they're just fucked. Ah, teeth.
My teeth are a little too flat.
Knock them all out by crushing your face on a step.
Mm.
No, actually, you probably can do the latter thing.
You could. I think you would really, really regret it. You'd regret it terribly.
Yeah.
The shape of your face would change quite badly without teeth. I mean, if you look at the mouths of your mates who maybe had braces at school, and often that, depending on what kind of braces they were, that required removing some teeth, the face shape changes quite dramatically. So losing all of your teeth, it must do a lot. I mean, even if you then put dentures in, it still must make quite a big change to the shape of your jaw.
I've seen it 10 years younger in 10 days, and it looks great.
I don't know, man.
I get all my information from TV reality shows.
Just like breast milk, the real deal is better.
Oh, okay.
Actual teeth, better than plastic. Unless, you know, you have no choice, in which case, enjoy your dentures. All right, let's push some buttons.
The news.
We already did all the news.
Next story.
Just let's say I put that between every story that we did.
Best of Life Hacker.
There is no Best of Life Hacker this week.
We've got a guest on Discourse.
That is a lie.
No, bullshit.
Urban Dictionary, Word of the Week.
Oh, no.
I think we actually have retired that again.
Unless someone sends us like a really fucking good Urban Dictionary word, I'm not just going to trawl randomly through Urban Dictionary looking for them anymore.
All right. Every listener who has made it this far through the show, send us Urban Dictionary words. Just on the website. You'll find it.
What's your auntie been talking about?
Obviously, my auntie's been talking about UFC.
My auntie's been talking about all the shit I've been watching on Netflix.
What's latest?
I'm still working my way through Burn Notice.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I've watched all that stuff, yeah.
What else? House of Cards. A bunch of people have been talking about House of Cards, which is on there, which I haven't started.
It's pretty good. Yet, but
I do intend to at some point.
It's pretty good. There's some pretty ropey bits, but it's pretty good.
Melanie was watching, I can't remember, some old TV series that we haven't seen in ages. It was, you know, doing that weird thing where you watch this TV series you watched like 10 years ago and you're like, oh, wow, it's all coming back to me. Mm. It's good. It's just, you know, fun to browse around and find things.
Yeah. Did you watch any of that Duck Dynasty?
No.
Because I want you to watch that and then admit to me that some parts of it are, if not in a set, then far more set-dressed than you would generally consider acceptable.
I will try and remember to watch some Duck Dynasty.
Yep. Boolean Value in the chat room says, I was on tank water. We had manual fluoride treatment from the school dental nurse. It was horrendous. They painted some ghastly stuff on a couple of times a year. So why didn't you have that, Dylan? Were you homeschooled?
Probably what would have happened had I gone to school.
Were you homeschooled?
I was homeschooled.
Wait, Dylan. Were you actually homeschooled?
Did you not know this?
Were you, I mean, are you just messing around because you know I've got a prejudice against homeschooling, or were you actually?
No, seriously, I'm not sure. I can't believe we haven't discussed this before.
I had, but I knew you went to Metro. So was that like your only real school?
I was homeschooled for the entire period of time that I lived on Waiheke Island.
Which was from when you were a little boy.
At about 8, 9, moved to the mainland.
Yeah.
I started going to school.
Right.
Although I always had various issues with how school worked, which impacted me in different ways at different schools.
Oh my God. So we only children.
Yeah.
Which even though I have 4 half sisters, I'm still an only child because I didn't live with any of them because I lived with my mother. We only children have a bit of a reputation for being difficult. If you multiply that by a homeschooling, Dylan, I'm amazed that you're even as tolerable as you are.
I try. I try real hard. Sometimes I think I might even be more tolerable than you.
The show is cancelled. Beep.
Damn it, but that last bit, I mean, I can't let you have the last word on that.
I really think you should.